amount? I mean, for example, will it be an additional $200,000 a year, or what's that amount? Ms. Knight, or?
Mr. Schweitzer can come down and give you those numbers. And members, there'll be a series of resolutions for compensation, so it's not just particular to this resolution. And as Mr. Schweitzer is coming down, one final thing that I probably should have said at the top. This working and contracting actually at the NCCF started back in 2006 with the previous leadership of the House of Representatives to look at the market and salary ranges and make sure we're updated and competitive. And the report was finally finished up actually this week. So we were able to get it done in time for us to have it before this hearing. So with that, Mr. Schweitzer, welcome to the committee. Would you like to answer a reference to the question?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Schweitzer, House Controller. The analysis that we have is more on the overall pay increase proposals that's all before us. So I don't know that I can answer specifically easily for what's included in this particular one without a little bit more help, perhaps.
Okay. Mr. Schweitzer, then perhaps you could maybe give us a bit more of an overview overall. Would that be all right? Do you represent us there?
Thank you.
Yeah. Or Ms. Knight, however you want to do that. All right. If money, it's Mr. Schweitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was only hesitating because only a piece of the compensation study is before us today, and I didn't have a piece an answer to that specific question, but Kelly might be able to help me answer the question better.
Mr. Schweitzer, I think we're looking more for just an overall comprehensive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Overall, within the House budget, we had budgeted approximately 5.5% pay increases for staff. The resolutions that are overall that are before you today would be more the nature of 7.25% increases plus some additional costs for the ranges. So the additional costs for the COLA and the equity adjustments in calendar year 08, right now is somewhere around $500,000 total, but overall, the overall pay increase to staff will be higher than we had initially budgeted, and that was before this committee. But the State Government Finance Committee did provide additional funding for us, so we're able to use that funding to make these larger salary awards for staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to follow up on that, then, you mentioned about State Government Finance. And so with the additional funding that was in there, do we need to go back in next year's legislative session supplemental budget and address any additional issues that would be related to this financially?
Representative Singlestead, I believe we do not have to go back and address this. It's all within the House budget.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on this particular resolution? I can get more in depth on the COLA and merit pool and those when we get to that resolution. That's what Singlestead said.
Thank you. I'm maybe the only one that had coffee this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've brought up this point in this committee before, and this, I guess, is the legislative administration part of our rules committee. You know, I definitely believe that our staff needs a pay increase, and I know that, you know, you always look at sort of the package of what our state benefits are, because, you know, generally state benefits are fairly good compared to other jobs out there. But I think, again, this sends a message that, yes, we think our staff is doing a good job, but then what happens to the legislators? I mean, we've had frozen pay here for 9 years. And, you know, I think at some point we're going to maybe look at that. But I think the overall message is that we're having staff do more and more, and legislators are stepping back more and more because we need to work our other job to make a living. And so You know, I think that's a discussion item, and if we decide that that's fine, then that's our decision. But I think to not address where legislators are at is de facto saying we think it's fine that our staff makes more and more of the state government decisions here and legislators make less and less. And I personally have an issue with that. So I guess I'm just sort of looking at the overall view of state government, and certainly I like to keep costs down too and keep things competitive, but I think with this resolution passing today, again, we're saying staff, you're doing more and more work and decision making for state government.
Referencing the Fed, I would disagree with you strongly with that statement. With all due respect, I don't believe compensating our staff appropriately within the market and keeping up with the times of inflation means that they make any more or less decisions for us, but aid us in the process of running the House of Representatives in an appropriate way. And we still are the ones that post the legislation, debate it, vote on it on the floor, and ultimately get it to the governor to sign into law. And the staff is exceptional at aiding in that process, and I by no means want anyone to be under the assumption in this committee or elsewhere in the public that because we are choosing to follow the recommendations of the NCFL in compensating our staff appropriately to keep up with the market, that we are giving up any sort of authority to be the deciders of legislation as the voters elected us to do.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to conclude on this topic, this resolution will not affect legislators' pay, and it's a fact that legislators' pay has been frozen for 9 years. We are making exactly now in salary as we did 9 years ago. Thank you.
That is correct, and I know there's some bills floating out there and some ideas, and if you'd like to add a bill to the list, I'm sure they will be discussed in the next legislative session.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion on the M1 resolution? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Members, I will now move the 2007 P2 resolution before us. Member, 2007 P2. Oh,
they're not in order.
Okay. Members, this is the NCSL recommended increases for promotion. From our current practice of 2% to 5%, and this policy allows staff who will receive promotional increases starting on January 1, 2008 to receive additional dollars to reflect that 5% increase. And Ms. Knight, is there anything else I'm forgetting?
No, this is actually to bring members, this is actually to bring the House consistent with the Senate's current practice of offering 5% for promotional increases. And what we are also doing is we are retroing this back, at least the trying to make those people who have gotten increased, the promotional increases during the calendar year of July, we're going back to January. So anyone that had received a 2% increase, we are actually going to give them the additional 3% to make them whole so that the timing of this rules committee meeting doesn't adversely affect anyone.
Discussion to the resolution. President Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I understand that we did a 2% increase on January 1st, correct?
Ms. Knight?
Mr. Chair, members, only those employees who are in a series position, for instance, someone that would go from a legislative assistant 1 position to a legislative assistant 2, those are the only individuals that are eligible for the promotional increase.
Mr. Chair, do we have a breakdown then of what the cost of this is going to be, and do we have the funds available through the funding process that we already have in place to handle it?
For a breakdown, you'd have to ask Mr. Schweitzer. I do know we have within this budget the funds available to do this. Mr. Schweitzer, do you have a dollar figure on this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have a specific one on this one handy. The amount in this is fairly minor, though, because as Ms. Knight indicated, there's only at least for the current year, only those employees who move from one job to another get this particular increase. So it isn't for everybody.
To that point, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schweitzer, how many people are we talking? 2, 10, 50, 250?
Mr. Chair members, actually between July 1 of 07 and June 30 of 08, there are only 14 staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Knight, can you tell me, is this pay raise retroactive back to January 1 so that if they were under the 2% pay increase from January 1 to August 1st, we're going to go back and give them a lump sum, the 3% more or whatever it would have been from January 1 to now? That would be the fair thing to do if that's the way we are structuring this.
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair members, no. Actually, it is going to be effective on August 1. This does not retroactively take it back and replace that additional 3% back to January 1, but it brings them up to the salary level that they should have been had they received.
Mr. Chair?
Professor Mahoney.
Our employees need a better negotiator.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the P2 amendment resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Members will now move to the 2007 M2 amendment, and I will move that to put it before us. Members, the M2 amendment adopts new job series ranges, and starting on August 1st, 2007, but then again adopts new job series salary ranges January 1st, 2008. And if you look within your packet to the NCSL report, you'll find much of that information in there. Ms. Knight, anything further to add on that? Okay. Discussion on the resolution. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On a general question, when we get through with what we're doing here, are we going to be aligned with the Senate, or are we still going to be out of line, or are we going to be perfectly in alignment, or what?
Representative Earhart, I don't believe we'll be exactly in line with the Senate, but we'll be competitive across the market, which is easier for us to do than to just play catch-up or stay ahead of the Senate. But NCSL looked at an entire market to see if we're competitive, because it's not just us competing for employees with the Senate, but also more broad than that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, are we going to be ahead of the Senate in some areas and behind in others then, or?
Ms. Knight.
I'm just asking for a general overall.
Sure. Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair members, the recommendations that you see were the ones that NCSL gave us. For the most part, we are equal to the Senate so that we will be able to be competitive. There are several positions that the Senate made a business decision to change on their own, but we have not done that. We've gone with the recommendation.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the M2? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps Ms. Knight or Mr. Schweitzer could explain to us give us some examples on just how much of an increase this would mean if you took A, B, and C and combined those. I guess I'd like to know from July of 06 if a person was employed then. By the time you get to July of 08, what the increase over that two-year period would be.
Okay. Well, Representative Magnus, first off, it's hard to find an average because you have different employees doing different jobs and different salary ranges, and they were adjusted according to market. So would you be looking at particularly a legislative assistant or a nonpartisan research? I mean, That would be the difficulty, I believe, in answering that question, is so many different job classifications and ranges are here right now that it's hard to find an average.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, if we say we have someone that's making, for example, $40,000 a year, currently, let's say $40,000 they were making on July 1 of 2006, and what would they be making by July 1 of 2008?
Okay. And Representative,
I can relate that to what my folks are doing.
Sure, but again, Representative Magnus, it would depend on their what job they had within the House of Representatives, okay, as well. But if Ms. Knight has a better answer,
Mr. Chair, members, at all staff are eligible for the 3.25% COLA and the 4.5% equity adjustment. There will be some staff who are currently sitting at the minimum of the range, and NCSL found that current range to be way below the market. And in order to be brought to the minimum, they may need to be brought up to 8% instead of 7.75%, because the House policy is that we are not going to allow any staff person to fall below the minimum of the range. So, but an overall average, it would depend on the position.
Mr. Chairman, okay, is my understanding then a 7.75% basically increase currently? Is there another increase planned later in the next year, say in January or July or whenever?
Representative Magnus, that will be in the next resolution. There will be a discussion about another COLA increase and also a merit pool, and we'll be getting to that resolution, mm-hmm, I believe, next. Mm-hmm. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on the report from NCSL. On the first page where you have under the LAs, you have a note. This says legislative assistants who are assigned to a committee shall receive an annual stipend of $3,054. I guess I'm asking what that money is used for. Do they need to turn in a receipt? Do they have to spend it first, or do they get this just because? And is it reflected in a committee budget at all?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, no, it's an additional. The LAs have a base salary. When they become a committee legislative assistant, they are then awarded the stipend for the additional committee work, and it is considered compensation. And does not come out of the committee budget, it's out of that House salary budget.
So we're going from a PFC to a corporate in pay.
Representative House, this is the way it's been done for many years. There's no change.
I did.
Thank you. Representative Homestead.
Thank you. So just to follow up on that then, I know with the new committee structure this year, there are several committee administrators, committee CLAs, who are covering more than one committee, or a committee and a vision and a subcommittee. Are they getting this two times or three times or only once? How does that work?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, no, they're only getting it once.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if Ms. Knight could answer a question about the NCSL report. This talks about the salary range. I'm wondering if NCSL offered advice to the House of Representatives about placement at the time of hiring within the range.
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, we had a discussion with NCSL on a lot of our hiring practices, and they felt that our current system of giving credit for experience was a good system, and we opened up everything for comment for that. So they were comfortable with what we were current practices.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the M2 resolution? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just looking at the ranges that accompany the resolution, and I'm wondering if there isn't a typo. I don't think it necessarily makes any difference with the resolution itself, but if you look at the page where it begins media art production, and then research series and so on, We've got research consultant one, research consultant two, and then research consultant two again. Is the intent there that that's research consultant three?
That is correct. Representative Carlson, thank you for...
I assume that, and I just want the record to show then that...
Same on the next one.
Yeah, there's several there that that type will appear, so...
Mr. Chair, members, there's also the correction obviously didn't get done. It's also on the committee administrator position right below that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Several. So that'll just automatically be corrected with the passage of the resolution.
Yes. Thank you for spotting that, Representative Carlson. Okay. Any further discussion to the M2 resolution? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Members, I'll now move the R9 resolution. Resolution on compensation of House employees. Members, the R9 resolution first states that there is a cost of living increase on August 1, 2007 of 2.25%, a 4.5% equity adjustment. Next year, January 1, the reclassification and added job series positions goes into effect at that time. And there's a those folks that are promoted to the higher series, as we talked about before, would receive the 5% increase. And this would be capped at $10,000, except for, as Ms. Knight noted, for those individuals that we brought up to the bottom of another class. And then July 1, 2008, the next year, a 3.25% cost of living increase. And then we'll be going back to what Representative Paulson actually put in as chair of this committee, a 3% merit pool. And beyond that, also a 1.5% one-time deposit to health care savings plans for employees who have 1 year of continuous legislative employment effective July 1st, 2008. Ms. Knight, did I wrap it up? Did I miss anything?
No.
Okay. Any discussion or questions on the R9 resolution? Representative Singleton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering more details on the health care savings plan.
Sure.
Is that something new and different? How does that work here?
Sure. Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, our staff currently deposit their severance at the time they leave to the health care savings plan. It works very much like the medical dental pre-tax spending account, except there is not a use it or lose it functioned at the end of the year. What would happen is this money would be deposited in the employee's name. They have an opportunity to invest it. It's actually managed by MSRF. They can invest it however they see fit, and they may use it when they leave state employment. And they can use it for such things as COBRA premiums and any other type of non-reimbursed medical expenses.
So just to follow up the question then, so this doesn't relate anything with vacation pay or like sick days that were unused? This is something different, is that right?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, when staff leave, a portion of their sick leave, depending on, there's a calculation for that, is turned into a severance pay. And so a portion of their pay does often end up then into the healthcare savings account. And the good thing about it is the money goes in pre-tax, and then staff are able to utilize that money once they leave on a pre-tax basis.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Weston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Knight. Just generally, what are the numbers? How many are all staff going to be going up, or what kind of numbers are we looking at in aggregate totals?
Ms. Knight?
Mr. Chair, members, as far as the Representative Weston, the number, are all staff going to be getting
They're all going to get the increase that we just approved, but to become equitable with this NCSL study, what percentage of the staff is going to be getting bumps, and what kind of average bumps are they going to have to bring them to that level?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Westrum, that will depend. If someone needs to be brought to the minimum of the range, they could receive a percentage in excess of that 7.75%. But all staff will be brought to at least the competitive minimum. Beyond that, it depends on whether or not have they been in the position for 2 years and are they in a series? Are they going to go up to another position effective January 1? So I don't have an average percentage for you for all the staff.
For sure.
That's my question.
Follow up, Ms. Knight. I assume somebody's done some runs and estimates of what it's going to cost. Haven't we done that? Do we know if it's going to affect about half the staff that are going to go up greater than what we just approved, or is it going to be only 10 staff members, or is it going to be all of them? Or else, how do we budget? How do we know what the cost is going to be? I assume somebody in the office must know those averages just generally. I'm not looking for a specific staff number exactly, but we've got over 100 staff. We're affecting is there some sort of average or breakout that somebody's calculated to come up with estimates?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have that. We were focused on the total cost to be able to bring this within the current House appropriation. So it's something I can look at, but I just don't happen to have with me.
Any further discussion? Representative Magna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that we currently have a merit pool, and is that correct?
RSM Magnus, we have from year to year instituted a merit pool.
Yeah. And is that administered? How does that? Do we have a brief description about how that works?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, the merit pool in this example for July 1 of 08. Mr. Schweitzer will calculate the total salary after the cost of living increase is applied, and he will assign a 3% pool to each of the departments. The departments have discretion based on an employee's performance on how that's awarded, and according to this resolution, they may award anywhere from 0 to 3.5% based on performance.
Okay, so the minister is basically determined by the departments then, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Knight?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so as I'm looking at this, and Mr. Chairman and members, I certainly have a great respect for our staff, and I recognize that the continuous turmoil we have in turnover of the staff is not conducive to us being able to do our jobs the way our constituents and the state expect us to do them, and I certainly recognize that the salary limitations have been a factor in us not only acquiring staff but retaining them and keeping people around that we are really key to us all doing our jobs well. It's a team here, and we need that. But I am a bit concerned, Mr. Chair and members, about the size of the increase, and I know it's relative. We're starting at a low point according to the NCSL study, and we do need to make some adjustments. But again, we have to think about how we balance that with the rest of what's going on here in the state and in the job markets also. And as I look at it, we're looking at 11% increase over the next year or so, plus a possible promotion increase of 3%, getting up there to a pretty significant increase. So the struggle I'm having, Mr. Chair and members, is a pretty sizable increase. But do recognize that we are in need of some adjustments there.
Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on this R9 resolution we're looking at here, page 2, lines 16 through 24, what we're talking about right now, and I'm trying to just follow the flow here with the math, because it talks about 3.5, 3.0, 3.25. I'm wondering if one of those is a typo, or, you know, maybe Mr. Schweitzer can tell us how that works, because I realize the salary department head cannot give themselves their own merit pay increase, right?
Right.
So how does this flush out with the fuzzy math here?
So that's something else, Dad. There is no fuzzy math. You're putting a lot of words. you must have more. I don't know what was in your copy this morning. That's something else, Dad, I think.
I don't know.
there is no fuzzy math. Midnight, if you'd like to explain this, and the process of how department heads are looked at.
Mr. Chair, members, each of the departments, excluding the department heads, receive a 3% pool. That pool is calculated after the COLA of 3.25 is applied to the staff salary. The department head then has discretion on being able to award that anywhere from 0 to 3.5%. So we put some guidelines there so it's not 0 to 25%, it's 0 to 3.5. As for the department heads, they are getting salary increases, but they are in their own group.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same thing applies to the department heads, but the department head is not in control of their own salary increase.
Right.
And those department heads are put into a group, same formula applied, and then leadership is the one that performs those performance appraisals.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that description. Just a comment on the whole merit pay thing, because I think it has worked really well over the last several years. And I know with our caucus, we really used it as incentive for people to do their best, and I hope that that continues. I know there was some employees who had some issues about always being late or other things with their work behavior, and when it's pointed out to them that they could be making more money if they were doing their job appropriately and excelling in their job, I think it was truly an incentive for them to do their best. So I'm hopeful that that will continue.
Well, the same thing is said, as you see in the resolution, after we get through the adjustment period this year and the NCSL report, we are reinstituting it for next year.
Great, thank you.
Yep. Any further discussion on the resolution? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Members, I will now move the R10C resolution on vacation hours, and I will have Ms. Knight discuss this resolution. Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, this is actually kind of a two-part, and I'll let Mr. Schweitzer discuss the latter part. One of the things that we did is look at our employees with their high vacation balances. And we currently have a system where at the end of the year that if employees have not got those balances down, then they lose the time. What the portion that I am going to speak to addresses is we are taking on December 16th, we are taking any hours in excess of 300 hours and depositing that to the health care savings plan. So again, it's the same account to which the 1.5% would be going. And this is a pre-tax account.
Mr. Schweitzer, do you want to add anything?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the first part of the resolution, R10C, gives employees an option. It gives employees an option to convert some of their vacation or other paid hours in order to implement a holdback of their salary. Currently, all Newhouse employees have their salaries held back one pay period. That's the same system that the Senate has in place as well, that new employees' salaries are held back for one pay period. That's important for administrative purposes. It helps us. It will help us pay employees accurately to reduce the number of errors. So what this resolution for you does is it would allow House employees to voluntarily, if they wanted to, shift their shift their payback and move to a holdback period. It would allow them to do that and then simultaneously make up for that what would otherwise be a missed paycheck by converting the equivalent number of vacation or other work hours available to them. So it's a one-time adjustment that employees could choose to do. It would be a way for them to use up some of their vacation balances, especially as Ms. Knight indicated, employees who really haven't had much of an opportunity to use their vacation or comp time balances because of the demands of the schedule this year. So it's a way for them to take some of those hours and essentially bank it for when they eventually leave house employment. Because what happens is, all house staff do leave eventually one way or another, and this essentially gives us a final paycheck to that employee, really much like all other, which I think is a much more standard approach for all employees to have the salary held back. But it doesn't do it, but it doesn't mandate it. So because we don't want to impact employees by missing a paycheck, that's really not workable for many employees to do something like this mandatory.
Rep. Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a thought or a question, I guess. I assume that comp time, there's a lot of comp time that's built up during the year, and that's used then as vacation pay, mm-hmm. or used as comp time, so it's probably taken as vacation. So what happens if, right now, if somebody has over 300 hours of vacation time coming, do they lose it, or what's happening there?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, if the employee has not been downed, and there's actually two balances, one being 275 or 300, if they're not down to that once during the year, they do lose it at the end of the year. So after the December 31 time card is processed, regardless of how many hours they have, at that point in time, they are reduced at that time.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a comment on this. I'm just wondering, does this make an incentive not to take your vacation time? Because I think there's certainly a value of being away from the building here when you have a stressful job during session. Are we now kind of sending a message to our employees that, you know, we want you to stay here and bank this instead of getting that healthy vacation time? Can comment on that?
I can comment. I think it just gives employees a different option. Because this is not mandatory, it just provides people with another choice or option on the table. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Knight, I'm not sure I understood this correctly. So our current policy is use it or lose it. Do we let them carry anything over after December of the calendar year? And now we're going to, you can be carrying up to 300 hours over. Could you clarify that for me first, and then I have another question.
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, staff currently are required to be down to either 275 or 300 once in the calendar year. If a staff person were, for example, to enter the year at 305 and then not be able to get their hours down immediately and keep accruing during session, they would be reduced on December 31. So they are able to carry over, but just...
So in that example, Mr. Chair, that example, they'd lose the 5 hours if they carried 305 over and 300 was the magic number?
Ms. Knight?
Mr. Chair, members, if they started the year at 305, they would continue to accrue, so they could possibly be at 400 hours by the end of the year. They would then, at the end of the year, because at no time during the year had they been below 300, would then be reduced to 300 on the last pay period of the year.
If they didn't use any of their prior vacation, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. excuse me, thank you, and didn't use any of their new vacation, or in total, with the new adding into the old, didn't ever get down to 300 mm-hmm. or less, they then would lose that 100 hours in this hypothetical example. But if they were at 295, at one period in March and then shot back up to 375 or 400, that then they'd keep it all under the current policy. This policy will say they have to keep it under 300 in December, but they convert it to medical savings?
Ms. Knight?
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct. This way it would be reduced to 300, but that overage would go into the health care savings account, so it, we're protecting them from it being lost.
Okay.
And Rich and Western, they wouldn't have to do it. It would just be an option for them. This is not a mandatory policy.
Mr. Chair, I haven't got to my second question, but I need to clarify this. So what exactly are we changing then from current policy? We're just giving them an option to reduce those numbers of days over, or number of hours over 300 to the medical savings. But if they don't, they can now bank unlimited amount of vacations, or do they still have to get down to 300 or less at one point in the year?
Mr. Chair, members, actually, a point of clarification, the health care savings account, that would be a mandatory, that any hours over 300 on 1216 would go in. In order for the money to remain pre-tax, it has to be mandatory. Otherwise, it's considered constructive receipt, and the employees would have to pay taxes on that money. But to answer your question, the change is that we often have staff, we've seen over the years with special sessions and just sessions that are extraordinarily busy, where they accrue a lot of comp time and they accrue a lot of vacation time, that are unable to, especially our senior staff, just unable to use it all by the end of the year and end up losing it on after the 12/31 pay period. This would give them a vehicle, and actually two vehicles, one with Mr. Schweitzer's holdback proposal, but then also on 12/16, that's the safety net. Anything over 300 hours would be deposited to the health care savings account.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, to my second question, thank you, Ms. Knight, that helps clarify that. And I know this is a little bit of an ambiguous question with an ambiguous answer, but give me a range. What is our staff? I've never looked into exactly all the vacation pay and what are we generally giving them, and what are they accruing in a year? And from your earlier answer, we're also adding comp time into vacation pay. So if they work an 80-hour week during session, they might pick up 40 hours of vacation or comp time. Excluding the comp time, what's kind of a separate issue, vacation, generally, what are they starting at with the employees here, and some of our more senior staff, where are we at on vacation? So do we start with 1 week, 3 weeks, 5 weeks? Is there a limit?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, at this point in time, anyone who starts with no previous public service would come in at 4.335 hours pay period. And so more than likely, those will not be the individuals that will be using this come December. They just won't have 300 hours. Our senior staff, Mr. Schweitzer, I just asked him how much he earns, and he earns approximately 9 hours a pay period. For
30 years.
30 years of service.
Okay. I'm trying to do the math in my
30 years.
Trying to do the math in my head, just because we usually talk about weeks, but they're basically talking, you're talking 1 day. Generally, every pay period, which is every 2 weeks, you get 1 day of vacation. No, half a day. 1 day a month. But is that average general right?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, you would get a little over a day a month if you were a brand new employee with no previous public service.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I appreciate your indulgence, and I think I'll bring closure to this. I'm just trying to put kind of a the picture out there of what where we're at in relation to 300 hours. And at first I thought, well, gosh, if they are banking 300 hours, that's awfully generous, and that's a third of a year they're not. But it sounds to me like it would take several years to build that much vacation pay up. In quick math, you can get about 12 to 15 days a year, which would be about 12 times 8, about 100 hours a year. Is that close? Okay.
Ms. Knight.
Yes, that's approximately correct. Typically what I see with the 300 hours is it's the combination of those staff who are senior staff, such as Mr. Schweitzer, is earning the higher level of vacation, as well as working the incredible hours during session and earning comp time.
Sure.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Westrom. To the R10 amendment, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this, and correct me if I'm wrong, when I'm looking at this is about compensating the individuals with the comp time and the vacation time. It's the money they earn for working here. This vacation time was calculated at a per hour basis and added into their salary. This would be part of their salary by taking it away from them at the end of the year. If we didn't allow them to put in the HSA, they would be basically losing part of the salary that they were promised when they came to work here. I've had to do these calculations as far as how much a day off costs per hour, and if somebody's making in the $20 an hour range, it's about 20 cents an hour that it costs for that, and it's calculated in their hourly pay. And this is what we're just doing, is compensating these people, again, for the incredible hours they put, not being able to get overtime, which normally in the outside market would be paid at time and a half. All that, this is to compensate them for that and not allow them to use the time off they got accrued, but also get paid for the time they actually do work.
Okay. Sounded like a comment or a question.
Kind of a question. Am I reading that right?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair members, yes. And it allows it to be put into a vehicle that is pre-tax that they can use later.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lopper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The ability to convert vacation hours to the health savings account is a really nice, huge improvement for our senior staff. I mean, and it will have some major cost implications long term. I don't see the incentives to go to the holdback payroll as, really, there's no incentive. If you're a current long-term employee, why would you want to turn in your vacation just so you can get your paycheck 2 weeks later? I mean, I just don't see that that's got any kind of saleability. Why would I turn that in, particularly if I could get this health savings account deal out of it? So I'm wondering if we might want to consider tying the two, because running two payroll systems with two different timing things is an issue. I mean, it just makes your life and your staff a lot more complicated. It's our senior staff who are not on the holdback payroll. It's the senior staff who have been able to accumulate 300 hours worth of vacation, and I'm wondering if we might want to tie these two, or at least like your assessment of whether or not we might want to say, in order to qualify for the new health savings plan for over 300 hours, you have to be on the holdback payroll. I think that will get us much more quickly to a single payroll system.
Any comment from the table? I could also try something out here too. The one disincentive that potentially could be is the loss of a paycheck, and to tie them together. And I think that's a concern.
Mr. Chair, if I might just respond to that, since they already have 300 hours banked of vacation time, they do actually have the vacation time to turn in, so that they wouldn't actually lose a paycheck.
Which Russian Blackwell, I believe, is the incentive. Mm-hmm. Any other comment from the desk on that?
Mr. Chair, members, we do have some senior staff who have upwards of 400 hours. So when you were asking about what the incentive is, senior staff are always looking for ways to be able to not lose vacation, and that would be being able to do both.
Ms. Knight, she misunderstood my question. I said actually this is a huge incentive and a wonderful benefit for our senior staff. What I was saying is I don't see the same incentive in the first part of this resolution, which is to go to the holdback payroll. And what I wanted your reaction to was to say that in order to get the health savings plan benefit for 300 plus hours, you would have to go on the holdback pay scale and turn in, you know, 2 weeks of vacation in order to move us more quickly to a single payroll system. So I was suggesting that we tie these two things together, that in order to qualify for turning in, say, if someone's at 400 hours of vacation, that to get the extra 100 hours converted into this health savings plan, they would have to voluntarily take advantage of the holdback using that some of that vacation time.
Any comment from the desk?
No.
Representative Philbert.
Mr. Chair, I understand that when we have two systems going, it may be difficulty, but how many senior staff are in one system and how many of the new ones? When do we implement the 2 week holdback?
Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, we just implemented the holdback this past January. So we have somewhere in the nature of 50 to 55, perhaps, roughly, employees that are on the holdback. So the other 220 or so are not on the holdback.
Mr. Chairman, that would be not just necessarily the very senior staff, but others that may be through the whole gamut. Mm-hmm. With this incentive, you probably will pick up some, but even without that, you are still going to have the two systems because there would be people that wouldn't have that bank to be able to do that. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, yes, that is correct. I think regardless of how we structure it, if it's a voluntary system as we're recommending, that yes, we still would have the two split payroll.
And Mr. Chairman, they may calculate how long it will take us to get to the one system. It could take a few years, probably.
Representative Soberg, it's a matter of not wanting to impose it on members. It's hard to say. It depends how, as Mr. Schweitzer put it before, one way or another, all senior staff are eventually going to leave. But we're trying to find a way to incentivize getting there sooner than later.
I understand. So I think it's a good point.
Yeah. That's from Mahoney, who's been waiting patiently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have actually two questions, and I'll ask the second one that I formulated first. How, and I'm not sure whether it's the chair or the witnesses that would have to answer this, how involved was the staff in coming up with these particular ideas or incentives, or are we following the NSCL or whatever it is recommendation?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I can only speak to the healthcare savings piece. I have had a lot of feedback from staff that as other contracts begin doing active contributions, that I've had staff approach me and say, have we ever thought about doing such a thing? And at the same time, I've had staff complain about the inability to use all their time that they currently have. So I simply married the two in this proposal.
Well, I'll just phrase it this way. Did our staff, any of the 200 or 300 staff members that we have that work in this particular organization, sit down around a table and say, let's think of some ways we can use this and throw some ideas out?
Representative Mahoney, it was staff that you see at the table and others who have developed this plan.
Well, that's good. It's always good to have the employees involved in how they're going to get paid. And the second question, Ms. Knight, are our vacation hours, the schedule of 4.33 per pay period up to 9 hours per pay period, is that far out of line above or below private industry?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know about private industry, but we do follow, that we do look at the state contracts. So we do pay attention to what the state contracts are doing with their vacation levels.
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Knight, I had to do some quick figuring in my head, you know, that math in the head stuff, and actually it looks like our vacation, according to the industry that I work in, is a little on the short side. So anything that we do that improves the ability for people to take time away from this thoughtful, wonderful place that we all work and enjoy is a good idea, and we probably need to look at how we do that and maybe if we can do it better so that they can get more time away.
That's some Winkler.
Mr. Chair, this may be, I guess, a simple question, and maybe I missed it, but I'm not sure I understand this concept of a salary holdback. In my experience, you start working on day one, and 2 weeks later you get a paycheck, and the day you stop working, you get a paycheck when you're done for the hours you work. What is the concept here?
Mr. Fletcher.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Winkler and members, For the rest of the state government, where I started is that you would start one day, but then there would be the pay period would end on a Wednesday, but we weren't paid until the following Friday, so 10 days later at the end of the pay period before we received our paycheck. During that 10-day time period, the payroll and accounting department would have the opportunity to see the hours you worked, and then calculate your pay based on your actual hours you worked.
So it's a 10-day turnaround, Mr. Chair? A 10-day turnaround between the end of the pay period and the time to process the payroll check?
Mr. Fletcher?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, yes, that's correct. That's standard in the executive branch. That is how they do it. That's correct.
Representative Winkler.
Wouldn't it have just been simpler to improve that considerably?
Mr. Fletcher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so just to clarify what we currently have for the employees who are not on a holdback period, if Friday is payday, what we do is we calculate your pay based on the number of hours that we think you were going to work for that day. Now, that's not as bad as it sounds because most employees are on a salary basis. So out of the 270, there may only be half a dozen or a dozen who are going to get less than their salary. So for the most part, without a holdback works, but there's those exceptions where a person is going to take a salary savings leave and didn't, or we have to estimate what the pay is going to be for that time period. For the new employees that are on the holdback period, for those employees, when they take a salary savings leave, HR will send that information to budget and accounting, and we'll then be able to calculate their salary correctly based on the number of hours that they actually did take. In more direct answer to your question, could we do it shorter than 10 days? For administrative purposes, we're trying to have just a single payday. And it's complicated enough having employees who are some on a holdback, some aren't. But we could work to shorten that time between the end of the payday, end of the pay period, and the payday. But we really can't effectively do that until we get everybody back on the same pay schedule.
Well, I guess my last comment then would be it's good to look at how industry and the private sector is creating salary ranges and be competitive, but I think this certainly sounds like the most complicated payroll system I've had experience with, and I would think that we should move towards simplifying how this is done. I mean, it's private sector manages to do it pretty efficiently as well, so I hope that at least we'll look at that over time because this seems very cumbersome.
It's a good point, Representative Glenn. I think hopefully this is a piece of getting there, but not the whole way. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, I just look at this as a, I think this is a real benefit to our senior members. I think it's a benefit that, you know, when we build up a tremendous amount of comp time during the sessions, it's hard for them to use these vacation hours. I think this is a good thing and for the employee, and I think it's for the long-term employee that you're looking at. So if you want continuity and you want people to stay with you, this is just a good move, and I think there's been a lot of thought put into it, so I think it's a good program.
Representative Wester.
Mr. Chair, back to what kind of started this discussion, Representative Lossler's idea of maybe when we're going to implement a new option to convert vacation comp time into a health savings account, maybe that'd be the time to make it mandatory to get on the single payer or the have one payroll system. That's what started this whole discussion, and so I think Representative Winkler touched on it and others that it does make it complicated for administration when we have two systems, and if we're going to try to move to the holdback system that we've now implemented. So I haven't heard a lot more discussion on that. I think that might be a good idea. I think implementing it right now might be too soon, but to get there, it seems like we should maybe adopt or amend the resolution in concert with what Representative Lossler was suggesting, because when we're offering this new incentive, that's also the time when we're giving something to also kind of try to streamline things at the same time, and maybe we should look at a 2 or 3 year after 2 years after 3 years, this conversion won't be available anymore if you haven't taken steps to convert to a holdback payroll system. So I would suggest that, Representative Lossler, as maybe a way to bridge some of the concerns that Representative Soberg and others brought up. Maybe we should look at a date certain out in the future that this new incentive won't be available if you haven't converted to the single or the holdback payroll. Just a thought, if you'd like to pursue it, I think that'd be a way to go.
Representative Western, I think you make a good point that we should look at this again down the line. I believe, once we get back in session in February, we'll be into a new year, and we can see how the end of this year goes and then look at it again when we convene back into session.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Western.
The only problem with that is once we put this new policy in place, it becomes the new baseline. Where if we did it now, it wouldn't be that we're taking something away or modifying something or making it less than it was at one point in time. So that'd be my only concern. But if I hear what you're saying, maybe we see how many people voluntarily convert because of this. Hopefully we can look at it then again next year, and maybe we should explore Representative Lossler's idea a little more thoroughly sooner than later, just to make it more streamlined.
Okay. Mr. Spicer, a comment to that.
Mr. Chair, just one comment, just a clarification that the holdback option is only available in fiscal year 08. So, yes, if the committee did choose, if we have a good experience with this, we'll have to come back to the committee. The committee would have to authorize this again for any period beyond fiscal year 08. So this, in one sense, is a one-time option, but we do commit that we will make this available to employees four times during this current fiscal year.
Okay. Representative Cross.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I think this should have more discussion, because what comes to my mind, not all staff have the same salary level, and some of them may have accrued a fair amount of seniority, but it may be a lot more difficult for some in the lower salary ranges to make that adjustment than some of the staff that's at the higher level. So I would suggest that maybe we continue that conversation so that we know what the impact is going to be on all categories of our employees.
Yeah. Representative Carlson made a good point. When this was developed, we took that into account, and that's why it is not mandatory. Because certainly I believe those who would choose this option are most likely going to be our more senior members. But they're also the ones who are not in line with pay period, with the holdback as well. So that's a very good point. Any further discussion on the R10 resolution? Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the second half of it about the excess vacation hours, I was just sitting here thinking about any unintended consequences of the policy decisions we make. And I can think of two on this issue, and I don't know if there's any way to resolve that, but the first one is I think it's maybe perhaps more of an incentive to have longer hours during session, and I would think we would want to go in the other way. I mean, I remember last spring, Omnibus Week, I think a lot of staff put in like over 100 hours that week, as did many of us. But so think about that incentive for longer hours during session, which, you know, I think people for their health need to be working, you know, 40, 45 hours a week and not a whole lot more. And then the second thing is, what does it do for a potential December special session? Does it now say we think it's okay to have special session in December, where in the past, I know there's a lot of people in a situation would say, I'm in that use it or lose it situation, so I have to take vacation in December. And is that switch now? And I certainly don't want to send a message that, you know, December special session is okay. So I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, your thoughts on those two possible unintended consequences.
As some single said to the first point, I'm all for shorter days on the floor. So I believe I have my theories on how we can shorten that up myself. I'll leave those to myself at this time. And I, ultimately, the governor decides when a special session is, and I don't think he'd be looking too closely at the staff vacation times. I think it's more based upon the need and emergency for calling a special session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Further discussion on the R10 amendment resolution. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Foreman.
Because I know we're probably going to adjourn really quickly after we vote on the last thing, I just want to mention before we do the last thing, if we could in the future have our handouts photocopied on both sides of the paper, then we could use half of the amount of paper that we have in our packet.
But the job's in the north.
Before this devolves, we actually have two orders of business left, and I have a third one before adjournment that actually somewhat deals with Representative Portman's request. And her and Silver can fight afterwards about this. And Howells will probably jump in. And we're not there yet, though. So members, we have a little bit of work left to do here. We're next going to go to the R3B resolution. And I will move the R3B resolution. And this is an amendment to the committee rules that we, or the resolutions we put together at the beginning of the year, dealing with mileage reimbursement, and we had quite a bit of discussion on this, especially pertaining in three ways, to the minimum, to the maximum, and to those legislators who have districts that are quite large. What this would do, it would bump up the monthly minimum reimbursement to $100, the monthly maximum to $850, but then also add some recognition of those districts that are quite large for an additional $100 per 1,000 square miles of that district. Any discussion for the R3B resolution? Senator Norhart.
Mr. Chairman, what is the start date for this? Is it June 07 or what?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that the start date for this resolution would be upon adoption today, unless Mr. Schweitzer has a different opinion. I think that it would begin after adoption by the Rules Committee.
And Mr. Schweitzer, is that your reading of the resolution as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe it would be effective for the month of August, so that which would be the current year.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's not the way this reads. It says during the 2007 to 2008 interns, and so that would mean that this begins June of 2007. Mm-hmm. I would accept that you want to start it in August, but that's not the way this reads.
Right.
Okay. Mr. McCormick, do we need some new language there then?
Mr. Chairman, I would amend it on line 8 by saying provided further that beginning August 1, 2007 and continuing for the 2007 and 2008 interims.
Okay. Staff will look at that language as they're looking at it. Representative Carlson?
Not to complicate it, Mr. Chairman, any further, but if someone had already submitted their request for August, are they at the old number, or will there be an adjustment to the new number?
Mr. Schweitzer, will we be able to communicate with legislators and staff of this change so that they are aware of it and are able to turn in the amount they'd like for this month?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, we would, all members would be given the opportunity to amend their August filings if they've made them, and we would make those, and we would make those payments and respect the members' wishes.
Okay. Do we have the language? Okay. I will incorporate that into my amendment to the resolution. Any further discussion? Mr. Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schweitzer notes, offhand, how many districts are of that larger size? Obviously, the metro districts are in just outer suburbs are smaller because of that greater population. But do you know offhand how many districts are affecting?
Mr. Westrom, it is 11 districts.
11 districts. That Mr. Chair, is that the 11 districts that go to the max? How many are there? In addition, have the $100 for 1,000 square miles. Is that number is 11? Or
unless from that number is 11.
Okay.
Yep.
And so what is the max on your district? What's the largest district going to get?
Representative Western District 6A is, and just for if you think about this for a second, District 9B is part of this list. It's over 2,000 square miles. District 6A is 9,646 square miles, quite a large district, and it has quite a large legislature too, so I think it balances out quite well, and that's what you get from Missing Rules Committee Representative Bill. members, his total maximum allowance could be an additional $1,650 of reimbursement for that district. Mr. Westrom.
Nope, that's it, Mr. Chair.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Westrom, that includes the $850. Right.
Okay. Okay.
That's in single stead. I saw your hand was half up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I was sort of thinking about a question. And now I just lost it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can come back to you after Magnus.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, thanks for bringing this forward. I would encourage the members to support the R3B resolution because you know our jobs aren't getting any less demanding. We've created expectations out there in the public. I think that we be out there. Supporting our constituents and in the areas of rural Minnesota where you have a big area and some of us around the table have that. It does put some of those members that at a significant disadvantage to being able to service them, to service their constituents as they are requesting to be served by. And so, Mr. Chairman, members, I would support the resolution.
Any further discussion? That's from Singlestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment then. So the resolutions that we've done today, the other ones have all been related to employees, and this is the first one that relates to legislators, and I believe the next one does too. So I just wanted to make that clarification.
Yes. That's a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify that the minimum allowance of $100, that is actually up to, I mean, if those of us felt like $15 a month was more an accurate reflection, that we could go to a lower level.
Absolutely. All voluntary. Absolutely. All voluntary. As all member reimbursement is.
Yeah.
Hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion on the R3B amendments as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Members, we have two items left. We're in a one's not on the agenda, but we'll stick with the agenda here. We have before us a resolution of committee and minority budgets. It should be in your packet. I will move the proposed House Committee and Minority Caucus budgets for 2007-2008. Members, if you recall, at a meeting right towards the end of session, before we saw how all the numbers would shake out, we had proposed some preliminary numbers for committees and also for the minority with the acknowledgement that we would come back and enhance those budgets. We have now since done so, and that is reflected before you today. As you can see, the original allocation in May, the additional allocation, and then the total for now. Any discussion to the committee budget? Sessions Simpson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I haven't been around here too long. but I've been around long enough to see that in the past what our budgets have been. And it looks to me like the numbers I'm seeing in front of us, I know we almost doubled our committee size last year, but we're also going to double our budget. Am I correct in that number? Mm-hmm. I think I'm showing around $325,000 last year, and from $324,000 we're going to $646,000. Is that correct?
That is correct, but you've been around here even longer than that, and I can recall you back to 2001, 2002, when committee budgets were $735,000 as well. So it has fluctuated somewhat based upon the amount of money the legislature receives, but then also I think the philosophy of committee chairs and leadership to actually engage the public more, to get out on the road. I know it's very important for the committees, and many committee chairs have expressed interest to travel the state, to engage the state, to bring the capital to them, and that would be reflected in these budgets.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that's well and good, but I think we also should keep in mind the fact that we aren't back to the levels we were in 01, 02 either, as far as our state incomes and the amount of money coming into the state. So to completely double this, I think, is very aggressive. I certainly think there is room for an increase, and if an increase of maybe 50% of that, that would still be a huge increase, but to completely double the budget, I think I just think that's a big increase, and I hope everybody sitting around this table realizes that when they go home, that people are going to, they're going to have to explain the fact that they just doubled their own budget down here, and we're certainly not doing that on the local levels. We're asking our communities to hold the line. We're asking them to stay within the 3-5% range, and I'm hearing from my communities they're having struggles doing that. So and the next time I turn around, I come down here and I'm asked to vote for something like this, it makes it a little tough for me. So I'm a little concerned.
And Representative Simpson, just to recall again, this is we're not going to be getting close to historical highs on this, and it's within the House budget, as was voted upon and approved upon by the governor during the session, and it provides us the ability to reach out to the public even more so. Mr. Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a bit of a question here that in the case of committees needing additional funds or some committees not needing the funds we're allocating here, if we do in fact pass this budget, what's the process for moving funds between the committees? Do we have a process like that, and how would you envision that happening?
That's a Magnus, good question. I think there's a few answers within there to help this process out. When I look back historically through the budgets that have been provided for the past decade, as I've said, they've ranged from above this proposal to below this proposal, and I can recall, not in my recent time here, serving on committees that never toured, and I talked to committee chairs and I said, we just don't have the money to get out there and talk to folks. But when I've looked historically, the budget has never, nobody's ever met the entire budget. There's always an amount that's left over total, and that goes back into just the House budget itself. But there have been occasions, as was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, when the Capital Investments Committee came back to the Rules Committee and asked for an increase because their original amount was not enough for them to get out and tour the state of capital investment. It would be the same thing here. The Rules Committee would have to make those decisions.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Mr. Chairman, with that understanding, because I am, we never know what's going to happen during the year, and in a good case is the tragedy we've had with the I-35W bridge going down, and I know we're having hearings with the transportation committees, and you just never know. So I'm glad that we do have a process in place, and that was my understanding as we came in.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as we look at the carryover budgets, my understanding was that it would go back into the into our administrative budget. Has that been? Could you give me an idea of how much that historically has been, say, the end of the year, if we, when we come in here, let's say out of the $646,000 we're looking at here, assuming we had that over the last 8, 10 years or whatever. I don't have any history of how much those funds we used and how much has been turned back. Do you have any numbers you could share with us?
I do. That's a magnus. If we look back just to the last biennium, the 337 was allocated, 187 of it was spent. And as I said before, I recall many committees did not go out and travel then. If you look back 2 years before that, 322,000 allocated, 139 spent. And then if you go back to, I believe, the first 2 years when Republicans were in charge in this decade, the amount approved was $735,000, $289,000 was spent. Members, we're not voting today upon spending any more money. This is just how we're spending money within the House budget.
Mr. Chairman, with those numbers in our background, it seems like we've been significantly underspending the total committee budgets, and I do have some concerns too, like Representative Simpson raised earlier about the total amount here, and not only the total number of committees, but the total amount being spent, and if we have historically been spending significantly less money than that, I'm not sure if our decision is the correct one to go ahead and bump it that much.
As I stated, this money is just appropriated within a budget. It's not any new money that's being spent. So we certainly can always go back and address it either up or down. I've heard from almost every single committee chair that what has been missing the last few years is more interaction with the public, more travel of the committees, bringing the state capitol and their government to them. And because of that, that is why we want to make sure they have the resources so that on a bipartisan basis, committees can get out and interact with the public more. Any further discussion to the committee budget? Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I was curious to know if the Transportation Finance Division's budget was set before the bridge went down.
Yes, it was.
And so, Mr. Chairman, there would be a possibility if we get into extensive hearings of improving that.
Representative Earhart, I have spoke to the chair leader and assured him he will have the resources he needs to conduct his hearings.
And one other question, Mr. Chairman. This new commission that's set up to investigate whatever it is, that's going to come out of the Speaker's budget?
That will come out of the House of Representatives budget in total. It will not come out of the chair leader's committee budget.
Thank you.
Representative Westra.
Mr. Chair, thank you for those numbers. Do you have available anything further back? Go back to 95, 96, and we had surpluses upon surpluses, prior to the Republicans being in control in 99, what was spent then, and it looks like everything was under 300,000, even in the good years in the late 90s. Has that been the high water mark, or were there years prior that actually got into the $400,000-$600,000 range? Do you have that, Mr. Schlesinger?
The number has always fluctuated, and I can go back to 1999 where it was $684,200 as well. So
that was what was spent?
That it was approved. What was spent was $413,808.
$413,000 in 99.
In 99, 2000, correct.
Is that the highest mark we've had? Does anybody know?
We can attempt to get you that information, Representative Westrum, from year to year.
Okay. All I need to really know is if that's the highest, 413 and 99 is the highest watermark. That'd be insightful if it was higher prior to that, and then I'd like to know that as well. But
that's a question. I believe it has been higher than that in the past.
Mr. Chair?
And to this point, Representative Solberg and then Mahoney.
To this point?
Representative Mahoney and then Solberg.
Do you want us to include inflation in that, Mr. Representative Weston?
What's that? Inflation.
Yes. Would you like us to include inflation in that?
I suppose it would make it look worse if it was under Democrat control and they were higher than Republicans were later years, but to not make it look worse, just give me the actual cost.
Okay. We're looking for your investor. Let's go forward.
Mr. Chairman, these budgets do factor in one thing. And that is the mileage has been a great increase that has come out of each budget. And that's a federally determined mileage rate.
And that is a good point from a long-serving chair. Reverend Kinderfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to unintended consequences and incrementalism again and just sort of make a comment. You know, I appreciate that you said that, you know, committees need to get out around the state, but I think, you know, we're making decisions in this committee to say being a legislator is no longer a half-year job. It's more involved than that. And, you know, I think it's important that we have a citizen legislature where people have jobs outside of being a legislator. And by having more and more committee meetings, more task force subcommittees meeting outside of the regular session, you're really, I think, limiting the number of people who can serve as a legislator because it's now becoming a full-time, year-round job rather than staying part-time. So I would just like to, you know, make members cognizant of some of these, you know, incremental decisions that we're making here today and sort of the long-term impacts of the message that we're sending about legislators and staff and the number of hours that we work. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Members, final order of business today. We discussed actually, one more motion I need to make, I'm sorry, just to make sure that if Representative Carlson didn't catch all of the errors in whatever I did today, I'd like to move that staff be instructed to make any technical and grammatical changes necessary to the policies we've adopted today that are required to fit these new provisions into existing health policy guidelines. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, you're beginning to sound like the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair? Good.
Mr. Chair, I know we're done, basically, but is there any update on last spring we had a discussion of some motions from Representative Osmond, I don't remember who they all were, but the motions on technology and going paperless and keeping equipment compatible with adaptive equipment, all kinds of administrative and technological stuff. Has staff been working on that? As I recall, we were going to revisit that sometime down the road. Do you have any updates on that, or is that still being put together?
Well, Reverend Weston, thank you for the softball. That's what I started to say before you raised your hand. As promised in May, we are developing now the working group for health technology and efficiencies that will be chaired by our vice chair of this rules committee. On a few fronts, there's been a group of legislators working on e-waste globally, but then also what we're doing within these buildings. Representative Pawlowski has actually been doing quite a bit of work on the technology side of things, not just for the House, but in general. Much of that can go through his committee, but good suggestions that deal with the legislature would then come through this committee. Many of the ideas have been discussed, but I think we need to fold them into this process so we can start seeing what dollar figures we're talking about as far as costs and savings. There was a number of members who at that time expressed an interest in being a part of this working group. We still have those names, so we'll be contacting those members to see if they're still interested, but then also going back to the legislature as a whole to solicit and see if anyone else is interested in this working group. So as I'm announcing today, we'll get some communication out in the next few days about members that are interested in this working group chaired by Representative Loeffler. Representative Whitehead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krenke was in the audience. I don't see him now, but he sent me a note requesting that I propose a motion for a 10-cent gas tax increase since we were doing the increases. But I don't suppose that's in order, though.
Representative Whitehead, I wish to God we had a bill in front of us to make that happen, but we'll have to save that for another day, hopefully sooner than later. Any further discussion? If not, I want to thank everybody for taking time out of a Friday, out of their schedules and their businesses. Good to see you all. We are adjourned.